Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharakana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. Today, we're joined by our guests, Kimberly Knight, and a returning guest, Frederick Murphy.
Since Frederick Murphy was young, he always enjoyed talking to his elders and hearing stories of family history. In 2016, he founded History Before Us, a project centered on capturing, preserving, and advocating influential history. In the beginning of 2017, he started traveling to the southeastern region of the United States, interviewing survivors of Jim Crow, the courageous individuals who didn't make the headlines. These untold stories prompted him to complete the award-winning documentary, The American South as We Know It. Frederick, a licensed professional counselor by trade, utilizes tactful questioning, empathy, and reflection to obtain relevant information needed to produce a true narrative of African-American history. Frederick also has a master's degree in transformative leadership and serves as an educator in higher education.
Kimberly Knight is originally from Eastern North Carolina. She graduated with a Master of Social Work degree from North Carolina Central University in May 2020. She is a 2020 North Carolina Central University 40 under 40 honoree. She obtained her licensed clinical social worker, associate licensure, and became a certified complicated grief treatment facilitator from Columbia University School of Social Work. Currently, she works as a teletherapist. She is the founder and editor of the Lux blog, North Carolina NC. She is the co-founder of HIV Cure Research Day for the state of North Carolina and co-founder of National Black HIV and AIDS Awareness Day for Wilson, North Carolina. Currently, she's a member of the Western Wake Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, Triangle Native American American Society, National Association of Social Workers, NC, and Junior League of Raleigh. She's the founder of the nonprofit organization Black Indians NC. She serves as a community advisory member for the North Carolina Central University Native American and Indigenous Student Association. She has served as a mental health support facilitator for the NC Commission of Indian Affairs and Haliwa Saponi Tribe monthly healing circles. Currently, she is a co-director and co-producer of the upcoming documentary, Duality, a collection of Afro-Indigenous perspectives. She enjoys time with loved ones, traveling, listening to podcasts, and cooking in her leisure time. Welcome to Speak On It, Kimberly and Frederick.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Thank you. We greatly appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for being here. So Kimberly and Frederick, your film Duality, a collective of Afro-Indigenous perspective, is a collection of personal reflections told by individuals of African and Indigenous ancestry who identify as Afro-Indigenous across America. So tell us, how did the two of you meet and what led you to collaborate on the film?
Us, Kimberly, I can speak to that. Well, with Frederick and I, we met in a very fun and unusual way. We both were serving on a virtual conference. It was a conference that was taking opportunity at, was it Kennesaw University down in Georgia?
Yep, Kennesaw.
And so with that, I was supposed to be there, but it was a snowstorm. But Frederick was able to attend in person, but I ended up on a virtual panel with him and we stayed in touch afterwards. And we ended up realizing that we had shared relatives from areas in North Carolina, Eastern North Carolina specifically. So started doing some research and things like that and found that this topic was something that truly would be great to bring light to film. So this is where it kind of began as our little origin story of us meeting each other and connecting about this. And this was in February 2020. So right at the height of the pandemic coming in about.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And I love that. I think a lot of us in the genealogy space, it's one of the coolest experiences when you go to a conference or on a panel and you meet like a cousin, basically, and the amazing things that can unfold from there.
So to both of you, the film gives a historical and present day account of how Afro-Indigenous people are and have been reconnecting with their dual cultures. This is for both of you again. Please share specifically what it means to identify as Afro-Indigenous.
And Frederick, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll jump in. You know, it's one of those things that to a certain degree, it's there's a lot of difficulty that's there if you are a person that hasn't necessarily grown up within tribal communities, you know what I'm saying? And so me growing up in Middle Tennessee, far removed from where my ancestors had come from, you know, I have identified, of course, as a brother, as a person with African descent, but very, very well of the indigeneity that's also connected to my family lineage. However, when, you know, you have this disconnect that has been there for various different reasons, you know, it's difficult to kind of be really planted within things from a cultural perspective. And that's not to say that, you know, you feel like a complete oddball, because, again, even with this film, we talk about the intersectionality of both, right, of both cultures. So there's still some similarities that are there. But I think from like a mainstream perspective, when you have this ideology of what an Indigenous person is supposed to look like and supposed to dress and supposed to do, that it kind of puts people in this space to where they don't want to identify as that because they don't want to be scrutinized, because they don't know the language or this or that. And so for me, you know, I take a lot of great pride in knowing that my ancestors left stories as well as their DNA, because there's DNA evidence as well that identify their indigeneity. And then, you know, for me, I have to take it upon myself to share stories, to listen, and to engage myself with individuals within that community so I can become more well-versed and have just a better comprehensive understanding of what duality actually does look like. And so throughout this process, of course, meeting Kimberly and a lot of other individuals from a DNA perspective, as well as just being in the filmmaking world and being a part of these various different cultures, because I was able to spend time with the Halawa Saponi in a previous film that I had did. You know, it's a very humbling experience because of the simple fact that you know that the people who told you who they are, that's who they are, when you're able to validate it in various different sectors. And it just kind of leads the mission to keep on pushing forward and claim that identification.
Absolutely. And I echo what Frederick said, because for me, I grew up kind of immersed in the culture, having family members that were both Native as well as African descent, specifically the West Coast, Ivory Coast, my grandmother. But I think what was really profound is just learning to appreciate both of these cultures and to be knowledgeable about both of them equally from such a young age. I've been attending powwows probably since I was 5 years old. And for any listeners that are not familiar with the Native American powwow, typically they're considered like cultural festivals or cultural events where you get to learn about a tribal community's educational sources about their language, culture, or history, and dance and music as well. And there's usually vendors, and it's really family oriented, typically for the public ones. So for me, growing up immersed in that culture for so long, and I'm not going to tell my age, so, you know, let's just say 35 plus years. But yes, it's where I've learned how to appreciate knowing that they really were very impactful in my life at an early age, to know about my family history and about the beauty of both cultures and the resilience of both. And just like how with this film, it really speaks volumes, because you have people giving opinion, but also documented research about what this history of both of these very empowering cultures have been through. So I'm very excited about this. And then for me, as someone who does identify as Afro-Indigenous, it's very important not to allow others to erase you or mm-hmm. others to keep you from enjoying and embracing who you authentically are. And just because you did not grow up in your cultural tribal community, or you did not know your African-American side of your family or African lineage as much, that's what we have technology for now, for you to discover that. For what has been hidden can be discovered. So I encourage people listening, please don't give up on that. Embrace who you are, push it down to as much as you can to generations to come. And that's how we keep those ancestral ties alive. So that's my thoughts on that.
Beautiful.
powerful, Kimberly. When you said embracing who you are, and for the two of you, like, I grew up hearing that my great-grandfather, they kept saying that he was Cherokee. And I kept saying, no, I'm not finding it. I'm not finding it. And so I found out that he, and I've shared this a number of times, that he was indigenous, but they had the wrong tribe. And so once I discovered that and started doing the research, it was empowering. And I think Frederick said it, it validated what the elders have been saying and what had been passed down. But before, I was like, yeah, everybody's just claiming Cherokee. The DNA confirms it. The tribe still exists out of Rhode Island. I've been to two of the powwows. And then what was really cool was years ago, went to a powwow and just thought it was like this cool thing to do. But now to go and know that you're celebrating your culture and it's not like embracing both cultures, it's really cool. So I appreciate the fact that, you know, here's Frederick on one hand discovering that he has indigenous ancestry, and then you, on the other hand, growing up knowing both and celebrating both. So I think it's important that once you find out, to acknowledge it, to celebrate. I don't put one over the other, because a lot of people, they find out that they have Native ancestry, and it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to embrace the Black at all. And then one thing, I don't believe we have this in our questions, but the one thing I wanted to get away from, or the one thing I try to highlight, is that when people think of complexion,
mm-hmm.
Native, and everybody, you know, touts it as, oh, well, you have to be super, super fair skin. I clearly remember my grandmother talking about her grandmother, or she would say my mama's people, they stole them off the beach, and they were high jaw, dark skin Indians. And I wrote that down and actually found a slave narrative that spoke to exactly what she said. So I don't think it's anybody else putting us in a box, no matter who it is, whether they be white, whether they be Black, to say, well, this is what Native is. This is what it should look like. So I think it's important to educate ourselves before we speak to something, so we don't speak in it out of ignorance. So thank you both. I love that you come from two different backgrounds in terms of your Afro-Indigenous heritage, or your experience is different, but you're embracing it. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. And if I jump in and say one quick thing, and Kim and I, we try to make sure that we do pay homage to our ancestors of African descent and Indigenous descent, or Afro-Indigenous descent, who were unfortunately taken advantage of sexually from enslavers. So a lot of folks are triracial, cannot negate that. And we have to recognize that some of us are here via an unwilling circumstance. And that is, of course, the R word. I don't want to get knocked out on the platform or what have you. And so to your point, like, and that's why research is so important. And Kim and I talk about this, because you can have a European and person of African descent, or a European and a person of Indigenous descent, and you still have the exact same features. Hair, high cheekbones, fair skin, you know, the whole thing which people talk about. And so it's very important that we do not minimize sisters of African descent who have been taken advantage of sexually, as well as women of Indigenous descent who have been taken advantage of sexually via these enslavers. So I always put that plug out there, because we would not be doing our ancestors a good service if we did not acknowledge that ugly truth. And I personally feel like it was easier for some people to just utilize that there are Indigenous roots within their DNA to not have to face the fact that the R word is part of our DNA as well. So I just wanted to say that before we move forward.
Very deep, powerful. Thank you for that. Something that you mentioned, Kimberly, before we go on to the next question, you said public powwows. And I've spoken with folks from various Indigenous nations and tribes, and they have mentioned that there are public versus private or familial ones. Can you speak to that a little bit at all?
Yes. So with public powwows, those are the ones you see advertised with flyers. They're trying to put them out on the news and community calendars and trying to really engage the public to attend. They're typically in the daytime. They're typically in usually well-known spaces that people frequent for festivals or community fairs or events. So usually they may be outdoors if it's like during the summertime or early spring or early fall. If it's wintertime powwows, they're usually indoors in gymnasiums of schools or universities. But their main focal point is to be giving educational and cultural awareness. So mm-hmm. that's the focal point of the public powwows, to educate people. Sometimes you'll see them intertribal. Intertribal means multiple different tribes are represented there. Sometimes you'll see one specific tribe may be hosting the public powwow, and it's where they're inviting you to the community to learn about their specific tribe. On the flip side of the coin is the non-public powwows. You may have things that feature specific dances or cultural rituals that are not for public consumption because of fear of people videoing or mm-hmm. capturing certain moments on video or participating, and they're not to participate in a particular cultural rite. So sometimes you'll have private ceremonies. Sometimes it could be sweat lodges, a sweat lodge is where there's a cleansing aspect to that of spirituality, which comes within that, which where they may have different ceremonial practices. There may also be different ceremonial dances, as well as different ceremonial regalia or dress attire that people mm-hmm. wear to certain private powwows. And it's sometimes by a specific tribe, or it might be intertribal as well. And it just depends on what the focal point of the connection of community is. Those are usually invite only, and you don't see public flyers or public events about those, but it might be something ceremonious that the tribe does annually.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that. I don't think a lot of people realize that, so I appreciate that.
And also, you don't, like some people will say, oh, your costume. It's not costume. I heard you say regalia. And that when they're in the circle, that you're supposed to really respect that. They don't care for you, depending on what type of circle it is. They don't like for you to take pictures at that time. So I learned that when I went, and it's a very spiritual experience. So they don't like to, it's not supposed to come across as, oh, this is entertainment. You know, there's right. a time for that, but it's very spiritual, and it was a beautiful experience.
Absolutely, Janice, about the images being taken, as well as when someone is wearing dressed in regalia, about asking permission to take images with them, or asking, can you, if you're touching their regalia with, you know, embracing them, or they're trying to hug you or something like that, because it is a sacred ceremonious outfit. So it's something that holds a lot of sacred work to it. So it's very important of respecting people's personal space with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very good information to know. Absolutely. Kimberly, can you share with our listeners about Virginia's Racial Integrity Act that Walter Plecker pushed for, and the impact that that had on the diversity of Afro-Indigenous communities based in Virginia?
Sure. So a lot of the concerns that people are learning more about now about Walter Plecker is with his idea of changing the status of people of Native ancestry to being colored or Negro. So the idea of changing identity, because then when you change one's identity, then that becomes an issue when we think about how that person is viewed in society, right? So that if you change them from being one ethnic background to another ethnic background, then there's these different protocols that come with it, because maybe that person is no longer seen as an actual full person. That person may not actually be able to vote. That person may not be able to purchase property. That person may not be able to marry in certain states. That person may lose certain rights and privileges that they may have had before that stroke of that pen happened, and that change of their identity was happening without their control. And that's why I'm an advocate for, now that the census is self-identifying, that to make sure you are very accurate in identifying, because it's important to know that there were ancestors that couldn't identify. There were people who were numerators who worked for the census that would come around and see you and make decisions for themselves about what your identity was. And a lot of that stemmed from that act that you're speaking of. So I think it's very important for people to educate themselves about that act, how it affected people who are Native ancestry in Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina too, because it trickled down a lot. And also taking space of understanding, that's how a lot of record keeping got lost and changed over. And then that became a challenge for people with tribal enrollment, and also with blood quantum for those tribal communities that practice blood quantum. So that's why I say it's such a impact of how that act trickled down to affecting people in so many ways, and rights and privileges and support that of connection of community start to disappear because identity was erased and changed.
And it's something that was mentioned, you know, paper genocide is the phrase that is used to describe this. And, you know, as stated in the film, it's wild that someone could have that kind of power, right? With, as she stated, with the stroke of a pen, a whole group of people can be like erased or written out of something or just have their identity totally changed overnight.
That's like in Rhode Island, when I went and spoke with one of the chiefs there, they were talking about how for years they could not say that they were Native, that they would be attacked. Kimberly, I was listening to you speak and doing some of the research, and I think you mentioned that they would even be taken, if they said, oh, I'm Indian, they would be taken out back and shot. And I was just like, that is insane. You can't speak freely to who you are. So,
yeah, that was a quote by Dr. Crystal Cavalier Keck, the co-founder of Seven Directions of Service. And she is of the Okanichi Band of Saponi. She did make that quote in one of our trailers for that. And yeah, that's unfortunate that those acts were taking place and where people really had to make decisions on how they identify with culture and race, because it could mean life or death for them. Mm-hmm.
So Frederick, I've heard you speak about using lived experiences versus telling stories. Please share why you believe that, you know, there's a difference. That's really spoke to me when you share that about just more than just storytelling.
Yeah, but because we're an extension, what we're doing today is an extension of what that was. You know what I'm saying? Like, it can't end. It has to continue, right? If we stayed stuck on the story that was given to us back in 1947, and then it stopped because no one decided to pick up the ball, then that doesn't serve this generation a good opportunity to learn more about themselves, right? Or to at least have some type of understanding on why life is the way that it is currently, right? And so it's very important that with our lived experiences, presently, that those experiences are passed down, that they're record kept in some type of way, shape, or form, because there are going to be some interested folks at some point in time later on that's going to come along, hopefully, and they're going to need to know what was part two or part three or part four of what, of course, was created in the beginning. And so if we don't pick up the ball, even with our own lived experiences, regardless of if you're on Mount Rushmore or not, or if you're in history books or not, if we don't do that, then you stop the flow. And we unfortunately can't stop the flow because we have too many entities that are intentionally against us being able to share and continue the legacy in which our ancestors have paved the way for. And so I feel like we all should look at this as being a very devout responsibility to keep that going.
And Kimberly, we learned that you, speaking of, you know, keeping things going, right? You picked up where your mother left off with your family history research. How has researching your family history impacted you as an Afro-Indigenous woman?
I think for me, the impact was, and I will definitely dedicate this portion of the podcast to my late mother. My ideal piece with it was taking on the torch of what her and my aunt started years ago, where they started at the very beginnings when Ancestry.com first came out, and they just started going to the library when there were card catalogs, if anyone remember those. Mm-hmm. And you had to get the little note out of the card catalog and go check a book out or do something. Yeah. And they were just trying to research and piece it all together because they had such a large family in such a condensed area in Nash, Halifax, and Warren County. And what was beautiful for me is over the pandemic time, I was taking time out and I wrote a 40-page document to give as a Christmas gift to my family, which features documentation of emancipation papers of relatives, also showing tribal enrollment paperwork, also showing different documents I was able to find and identifying family members that they had been looking for, the accurate dates and, you know, all that stuff, pictures and images, and then interviewing people that remember these individual stories and things like that. So it was literally a year journey of doing that piece of it. And it was very profound for me because it was not only a spiritual connection still to my mother, but also was a beautiful part of remembering the beauty of what my ancestors went through to get there. And I met a whole host of cousins along the way researching it through different genealogy groups and learning from different genealogists, these connections. But it was a beautiful year to experience that in 2022, to do that all while still filming Duality. So it was great.
Awesome. Awesome. That is such a beautiful gift to give to your family.
Thank
you. How far have you been able to trace back, Kimberly?
It was 1609.
Wow.
1609. It goes to 1609 to present day. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Job well done.
Thank you. Lots of research, lots of late nights, early mornings, and lots of good talks with good people. But just going on that journey, and Frederick heard me talk about the journey plenty of times, but it was just discovering even more about my ancestry and just family and connection of people and learning their stories, because that particular line of the family I went down, which was my great-grandfather, a lot of people had not discovered a lot about his mother's family. And it was time for someone to really uncover that rock. So I was happy to be able to start the journey of that.
Mm-hmm. So before we move on, you and Frederick have a connection. Can both of you speak to that?
I feel like I've been talking a lot, so I'm late for it to talk first.
No, it's all good. This is teamwork here. Yeah, so kind of like how you and I did, Janice, like you showed up with like three different, we're on like three different chromosome thingies. I mean, I'm not the best at knowing how that works. It just says we can follow.
Yeah, we're connected. And one of the lines with Deion Patterson as well is the Gauze line out of South Carolina.
Yeah.
Mm.
So kind of like when, like what Kim was talking about, we had the opportunity through working together at the inception of creating the film. And when we recognized that we both had family members that came from Warren County, North Carolina, Halifax in that area, we knew that obviously, you know, those areas back then, I mean, it wasn't as populated. The surnames are pretty much, a lot of them intersect. And so we just shared each other's GEDmatch numbers or what have you. And boom, there comes a connection. And then we started looking at shared matches. There was some meals that were connected. And then just kind of kept going back and back and back and back, and kind of used deductive reasoning to a certain degree as it relates to the location of where my folks were and where her folks were. And so we really strongly feel like it has come down that line, right? Now, the part that makes some of that, you know, difficult to a certain degree is like, when we talk about these roles and these things that have been put in from the colonizer's state, it's like I have multiple people who've been rejected on different roles. You know, I was shooting Kim. Oh, this one got rejected. This one got rejected. Look at this one. This one got rejected. And it was for frivolous, it was for, you know, petty reasons. It was, well, this person didn't live near the tribe, this one can't speak the language, this person was enslaved, or this person's mother was enslaved, right? Anything to make sure that you weren't, you know, part of the roles, right? Which of course was not the way of indigenous ancestors. You know, they didn't utilize that in blood quantum and all those other things. And so that had made it difficult as it relates to, you know, being able to identify quote unquote officially, if you will. Not that I look to that for validation, because I don't, but it would make things a lot easier, because it would be a paper trail that could go back even further than, you know, what I've been able to go back, which is the mid 1800s, early 1800s. And so, yeah, that's our connection. It's that Warren County connection and those tribes that were there. If you go right across the border there in Mecklenburg County, Virginia, you know, there was a Saponi tribe that was there as well. And so, yeah, that's our ancestral connection from an indigenous standpoint.
Awesome. So, Frederick, you noted that we determine the self-worth of our ancestors. We determine it, rather. Please explain what you meant by this and what you learned about your indigenous ancestors.
I definitely believe that we determine that the self-worth, because so many of their voices had been taken away for them, or their lived experiences has been narrated for them due to the circumstances that they were put in, whether it was enslavement or just, you know, restricted in movement due to Jim Crow, Black laws. You know, it doesn't have to go back to the 1800s, right? We can talk about now, even, you know, to a certain degree. And so for me, it's like, how do we take hold of that, right? Like, we should be the people that take the reins of that and identify what the worth is of our ancestors' beings, their past experiences, as well as what's been pushed down to us. And to be honest with you, that should be priceless. There should not necessarily be a price tag on that. But at some point, we have to take ownership of that for them, because they were put into this destitute state to where they unfortunately could not do such. And some people were, but it also came at a cost. You know what I'm saying? And so what I've learned, especially going through my great-great-grandmother's memoir, whose parents were from Warren, who was Afro, she was triracial. She was African-American. She was Indigenous as well as European. It is very satisfying to see how, like Kim had mentioned, utilizing modern technology now to be able to validate all the things that she says. When I go back and I look at the memoir and read those things, and she says all these different things and identify her grandmother as being white and Cherokee and her father as being Black and Creek. It's just one of those things that you just kind of like, okay, they left the crumbs. So when the crumbs are left, right, you can pick all of them up and put them together and have a full cookie again. And so that's what we're working on, trying to have that full cookie.
One second. You said to validate what was said, and how many stories do people have? And they're just like, they just leave it there. Right. Yep. So I love that. Now let me get that right. Who had the letters or booklets or the materials that you were reading through? Who held on to those?
Well, they were passed down from their granddaughter. Who was my aunt Kate. She passed in 2018. She passed in 2018. And so, they were passed down to her, and then she gave them all to me. I have the picture of those individuals in Warren County, so in my home. I also have some other artifacts, and I also have all the documents that she had from back in the, like, since she was a kid. Like, she was born in 1928, so she's had this stuff since like the 1930s. Yeah.
So do you feel chosen? Do you feel chosen? Like, you're the one that was chosen to get to do the research?
No one was doing it like me. I think all four of us.
It's such a blessing to have that passed down, because I was going to ask, like, how did you get these? And to find out that was passed, that is a blessing.
Yeah. You know, it's not very many people that, I mean, I think that it's picked up to where there's more people that are gaining interest or what have you. But you know, when you're the self-appointed family historian.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, I like that. You know. When you're
the point. And also, too, to that point, Frederick, I think sometimes people have things, and with the increased curiosity in it, they're paying more attention to the things that they have. Because, you know, you may not realize that there could be some letters in there that have like the whole family history, or at least part of it, narrated right there for you. And people don't realize it because it's like shuffled in with a bunch of, you know, things that are determined to be junk, you know?
Absolutely.
So Kimberly, I'm sorry, before we move on, Kimberly, did your family, I know that you said your mother and your aunt were doing the family history, but did they have a lot of resources to actually like physically give you?
Yes. They had a lot of pictures. That's what they left behind for me, because both are now passed away, but they had a lot of pictures, family Bibles, obituaries. So those things were super helpful. Wedding programs, things like that, baby announcements, things like that. And then writing those things also in family Bibles, if they didn't have the actual programs and things like that. So those things really, really helped me kind of pull it together. And then also one big resource I must say was, I have a family member who owns a funeral home in the area in Spring Hope, North Carolina.
Okay.
And that family member had a wealth of knowledge about the family history I needed to get to, with getting to the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth great grandparents. That person took me actually to the cemetery they were all buried in, where they had put restored headstones for them. So I was able to go out there and actually see their resting places and be able to like see the accurate dates and documentation. So that was helpful, as well as having a family member who's been a long-term owner of a funeral home in that area, who had funeralized many of our family members for over, that funeral home has been established over 100 years.
And, wow.
And that's why it was very beautiful to be able to have that as also another resource.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Can you both share your thoughts on truth-telling and trauma? And Frederick, you kind of mentioned this earlier with regards to the sexual exploitation of many of our ancestors. But, you know, both of you can jump in. Your thoughts, truth-telling and trauma.
Yeah, you know, it's, to me, you know how you hear the saying, you know, the truth will be uncomfortable. And, but I think that, you know, and I'll speak for Kim, if she doesn't mind, this from a therapist standpoint, when you've been practicing therapy as long as we both have, there's really nothing that you haven't heard before, which makes things a little bit I'm not saying it's easy. I'm saying when you're doing family history, because you've already been pre-exposed to so many of the things in which you may come across, right? You're predisposed to rape, the R word, sorry, to murder, you know, to death, to isolation, to domestic violence, to all of these things that, you know, that make up trauma. And that's just a few of them, right? And so when you delve into storytelling and with our history, as diverse as the background is, you have to recognize that it's a big pot of gumbo. It's a lot of different moving parts and a lot of different pieces, which also makes us what as unique as it makes us today, whether you're on the East Coast, down South, Midwest, or the West Coast. But there's still an intersectionality with all of us. There's still a shared language that we all have together. There's still the same feeling that we all have when you see something that comes across TV because of how deeply woven it has been in our family histories and our family experiences. And so going down this path, it can become very, very difficult, because you have to look at the traumatic things. You know, as much as we love to honor our Indigenous and our African ancestors, we still have to remember that most of us got some European ancestry too. And right. If you can't point to exactly where that relationship was and say that it was consensual, hello?
Yeah, that's right. No.
Let's just keep it a buck, right? If you can't point directly to where that European ancestry is and say that this was a consensual relationship, being that we're removed, but we're not too, too far removed from that time period. Yeah. Right. I think it says a lot. And so, you know, it's you know, with that question, because when I was going through some of my aunt's paperwork, and then I had some of my own paperwork and I was comparing it, and I looked at my third great grandfather's, USCT color troop records, all of them identified him as copper, his skin tone. Mm-hmm. And then she circled on hers, and I just had the fresh papers after I saw him. I was like, oh, so this was her researching that aspect, that Indigenous aspect, because, you know, that label was identified for Indigenous folks, right? And so in my head, I'm like, man, I wonder what she was trying to find, right? Like, I'm wondering if she was for the same validity that her mother had told her about, which she knew, but I don't know if that was just like, again, another one of those breadcrumbs. But even still with that, knowing that her mother was that her mother's parents were enslaved, or her father was, at least, I think her mother was a free person of color. How did that manifest in her internally? Mm-hmm. Right? Especially if you are in that space and then you grow up in the space of Jim Crow, living in Nashville where they're doing bombings and things like that because of the civil rights movement, right? And then does that trauma ever leave? And what are we doing?
Does the trauma ever leave? That's powerful.
Spaces, and then not only that, and then what is the country doing to, I will say that I feel that we've been slighted in what that looks like as Black and Brown folks.
Mm-hmm. Kimberly, I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add with regards to that.
Yeah, and I definitely echo what Frederick was saying because as therapists, that's something that connects us as well, even beyond just the family lineage piece, is the fact that we both practice therapy.
Right.
And the bigger part for me, with my background with it, is I see couples as well as individuals for therapy. And big piece of it, you do hear a lot of trauma, unfortunately, many times. And the association of the truth telling and the trauma piece is very important because even with this research of doing this film, we had to look through documentation historically that was very trauma focused. Sometimes you were seeing, images of people who were actually enslaved, like the actual real images and seeing what their expressions and things look like. You're seeing things of like documentation of people who were looked at as property and not as human beings. You're reliving a lot of things in your own families, as well as hearing people's stories in other families. So, and how all these things cross connect. And then also, you're seeing similar to what Janice spoke to earlier in the show about how sometimes people feel that I need to leave one identity to just focus on one. So you
Right.
see the trauma of how feeling like I can't identify with my blackness if I find out I have indigenous ancestry. And I'm a big advocate, and I can also feel comfortable saying that for Frederick as well, of supporting who you authentically are and supporting your blackness because it is beautiful. It's a beautiful culture and experience that's very wide and vast across the diaspora. And I think the issue comes in with this type of subject matter is people get hyper focused on this indigenous piece. And they don't really show homage and pay homage to the African ancestry research that still needs to be uncovered and done because of the trauma, because of the truth-telling issue. But what they'll realize once they start researching that there was trauma and truth-telling on both sides of the coin. So I want people to understand from this film, don't dismiss your other ancestries because you feel like now you've discovered this new identity of ancestry. Now, it's not the fact that it's something new, it's just something that you were not knowledgeable of. And so that should be meshed well with just as much enthusiasm to know about your African American ancestry as well.
Walking and chewing gum at the same time.
Right?
So, Frederick, you recently shared that our ancestors have a way of guiding us where we need to be with the history and genealogy research slash work that we do. Please share an aspect of your work that confirms this for you. And then, Kimberly, we welcome your response as well.
Yeah, I think from the guidance standpoint is it's again, it's going back to like the breadcrumbs, it's going back and looking at our oral histories, it's going back and looking at those little leaves that we see on ancestry.com that gives you that hint, you know what I'm saying? And then seeing how you can expand that and then of course take the reins and make the pathway yours, remix it a little bit with further knowledge, with further understanding. That amplifies what it is that was left there before, right? And so, like, I think that a perfect example is that is in 2021, I put together with my sister and two cousins a family reunion back in Warren County, North Carolina. Now, the reason why I was able to get this is because I was able to again go back into the family history. I was able to find the enslaver of my family of that side. And then reach out to the current landowner of the former plantation site, which is in Warren County, North Carolina. So that was the clue. I provided him with documentation saying that this is the family and the land that you have and the home that you own, which is dilapidated. It's still in place, but it's dilapidated, was where my ancestors were once enslaved. And so I took 2 years. This was in 2018 when I found this. I took 2.5 years to locate this person. Actually, the reunion was in 2019. 2019 or 2021. I can't remember, y'all.
The pandemic did it to everybody.
I know. But so I called up all my folks that I knew in Tennessee that were descendants of the ones that were forced to leave North Carolina to come to Tennessee. All my DNA relatives that I was able to meet there in Warren County, I called them up. I called relatives from just across the country and I said, hey, we're going to have a reunion on the site where our family was enslaved at. And some people thought I was crazy, and then other people were all for it. And so we had that reunion. We had the local news to come out. We had local relatives that were there in Warren County that wouldn't have never even known that we were connected if it wasn't for ancestry.
Wow.
And it was just a huge deal for us because that was our first time ever having a family reunion in North Carolina, and to have it there at that plantation site was very, very powerful. There, of course, there was tears, there was singing, there was just all the things that you know that comes along with our culture. And so it was again taking those breadcrumbs and not just letting it stay on the floor, right? Like, we have to create something of it, out of it. And that's what I felt like I was led to do by putting that together. And we still stay in contact with all these folks today. And hopefully we'll be having another one here pretty soon. But that's what the journey looked like for me. And that's what I felt compelled to do and ordained to do, to be honest with you, by the Creator as well as all the people that came before us.
Kimberly?
Yes, I love that. And I think for me, it was with my mother's side of the family, it's always been this sense of community of where we're from. It's a large family mass. So just to give some context, my great grandfather had over 30 children between marriages, two marriages, and things like that. And so with that, there we're such a large family. So community was very important to us. So there's a lot of history with that and connection of community. So going back to Nash County was an easy way to be able to find someone because also we look very much alike physically. So it's easy to go there and someone see you at a local community area and say, hey, aren't you related to such and such? So that sense of community is, I feel like, how the ancestors truly guide you. Also, just spending time with elders in the community and listening to different stories reconnects you to the genealogy work and the research that I do, even though I may not live in those areas anymore because, I've just went off to college and, moved away. It doesn't mean that I don't still have such a deep-rooted connection to the history and culture there. And same for my African American side as well. It's the idea of like there's a sense of community through, cultural practices, religious practices, food practices, all these things that, quilting and clothing practices, relatives on my father's side that were members of long-term organizations such as the United Order of the Tent or the Order of the Eastern Star with the Masons, just having that history behind that of being in philanthropy, which is also something that comes full circle for me because I'm involved in a lot of organizations myself. And so it brings forward just that piece of history of learning my family's dynamic of how they were in farming and nursing and also in construction work and learning like the history of the areas here. Like I visited some sites that my grandfathers were both construction workers on and I was doing the genealogy work and things like that. It brings it full circle of knowing that these gifts of trade and interest and creativity are not just something I am now the first generation to do. It's lived within our family roots for many deeply years. So I'm very proud of that. And I feel like the ancestors truly still guide us in that work. And even with creating this film, it definitely was a labor of love and support. And I feel that it brought not only Frederick and I closer as relatives, but also it reminded me of the beauty and strength of my own relatives that are not here with us anymore in the physical. It's one of those things of bringing it to life of where now we can hear other people have these perspectives as well. So, yeah, that's what it was for me.
I love that. When you said other people, I have a quick question. How did you choose or how did you find people to be a part of the documentary and share their stories? Did you put a call out or was it all networking and who you know, or how did that come about? How did it come about, the
Yeah.
participants?
It was a little bit of both. It was, reaching out to individuals and things like that that we knew from networking and community, but also just, in general, just seeing the content that people had also been discussing. When you're researching genealogy, you end up in a lot of groups, a lot of different
Yes, we know.
social groups and gathering groups, and you learn about people's stories. So some people, of course, can be cast from that, but just in general, there are people that I've known some of them for many years, even prior to the film. So just reaching out to them and like, making a sense of community and connection.
Wonderful.
I'm sorry. Did you? I have
Go
one more.
ahead, Janice. Right.
No, because she said something, and it's like there was something about, if I'm not mistaken, about how with our indigenous ancestors, how they use certain things for healing, and then our Afro or Black ancestors, they did the same thing, but they may have been called something differently. Mm-hmm. All right. Have you found that? Because I remember we got sick in South Carolina when we were kids. My grandmother went out, picked some little weed that was called wormwood. Mm-hmm. And whatever you had, you were fine the next morning. Mm-hmm. you were fine the next morning. So I think they had more, even though they may have labeled it as something else, their practice, it was pretty much the same thing. They had a lot more in common than not.
Yeah, that's true.
You have to look at how far back these two, depending on how a person looks at it, right? Look at how long this connection has been there.
Right.
It predates Columbus. It predates 1619. Mm. These sailors came over here from Spain and all these other places. They seen people that look dark. They seen dark people.
Yes.
It's documented.
Don't get me started. How you gonna discover something that somebody's already there? Like, explain that to me. Make that make sense to me. Okay, I'm done.
No, this is just real talk, right? Like these people, like they've been here forever and ever and ever. And so you're going to see so many, and we didn't go that far back into the film, right? We made it like modern, not modern, but we didn't go that far back, just because we didn't want to get down into the weeds of all that and funding and everything else. But yes, there's so much intersectionality as it relates to, even when you look at the way people over in the continent of Africa, from a tribal standpoint, like the earrings, you may look at the skirts and dresses and things like that. There's so much that's there. And then when you come here in this soil and you see how Black Americans dress and how it's connected back to the motherland. Well, when you look at some of these tribes, it's the same exact
thing. That's true.
But as it relates food ways, there's a lot of similarities with food ways, sassafras roots. When you talk about, just so many, the cherry bark, like those are things that was left in my grandmother's memoir, right? Like
we never went to the doctor.
Right. I mean, yeah, absolutely. You know what I'm saying? And so, and even my great aunt, the one I told you all to pass down the stuff, she would say, yeah, her mom would just go out into the woods, grab stuff, bring it home, put it on the stove in a pot, tell them how the water boiling, throws it all in there, and they're drinking all these different things. It doesn't taste good, but whatever ailment they had, it was gone, right? And so, and that's one of the things that Kim and I try to do is to not separate them, the two.
Yes.
Which is why we call it the intersectionality. Because overlap, especially as separating them, right? But that's also the issue that comes in today, is that everyone has their divisive way of looking at things that doesn't allow that reunification to come into play like it should, to make us just as powerful as we were when you had brothers and sisters escaping down to Fort Mose down there in Spanish Florida, and the runaway indigenous and African and Afro-Indigenous folks to safety in this community, right, that created a safe space because they knew that they were fighting the same enemy. And so there's so much of just the exact sameness, if you will, that's going on between the two.
Wow, thank you. Chair Connor.
Yes.
There you go. Okay.
Okay. I was here. I was speaking, but I guess it knocked out. But I don't know, Kimberly, if you wanted to add more to that.
Yes. So I was going to say, yeah, you're going to see a combination of how beadwork, music, food, a lot of things that Frederick spoke to, even like the sassafras roots teas and things like that. Those are things you commonly hear. Mullein teas and all these different herbal medicinal practices of taking care of oneself. But we didn't get to dive as deeply into those specifics, but you will get to see how there's these intersections of these two cultures with the film. And I think it's really important for people to realize, like, we are more alike than we are different.
Yes.
It is a lot of impact here, where a lot of some of the shame, struggles, and challenges with social justice issues, healthcare, access to education, you know, well-being, mental health challenges and crisis and trauma. There's so many things that are so parallel in these mm-hmm. two ethnic groups. And the sad part is that we don't have to be divided. We can be connected and understand that we are definitely more alike than we ever will ever be different.
We don't have to be divided. I love that. thank you.
So our time together is coming to a close, but before we kind of close out, one of the things I wanted to kind of share is that I find this conversation very refreshing because the topic of Afro-Indigenous identity and what that means, and I got Cherokee, my family, I think all of that is becoming a much more talked about topic. It's being touched on in many shows, various spaces and social media. And the dominating narrative is that basically that Black Americans are lying, right? And, you know, that there's this made up narrative that being, you know, that it came about because of European and African ancestry. And I think, yes, some of that did happen, right? Folks were of mixed race. And they created a narrative. But what's refreshing is to see folks who are Afro-Indigenous who are saying like, no, like we exist. We have documentation. These are our stories. This is where we are. I can show you this. I can show you that. And I just feel like that is an important part of the conversation to like combat this idea that, you know, Black folks are just making stuff up. You know what I mean? And so I find this refreshing. I'm happy to see that this work is, you know, continuing. You know, we wish you both success with, you know, this research. And with that, are there any parting words of inspiration that you both want to share with our listeners?
This is Kimberly. I'll say thank you again for inviting us here. I really enjoyed this conversation today and very excited to have met both of you and to learn that you enjoyed, you know, learning more about our film. For me, with words of inspiration about that, yes, there is this narrative that Black Americans have this Cherokee grandmother princess person or this type of thing like this. And yes, there are some truths too. Yes, there are people who are related to that specific tribe, but I always encourage people, there are over 600 identified tribes in the United States. So when we're exploring the genealogy and the accuracy, we're looking at some key things, where you were born, where you married, and where you passed. So that way it's the idea of looking and making sure in those communities that historically may be in a different tribe during that time, mm-hmm. that may be via tribe that doesn't exist anymore due to, you know, just so many different disadvantages. But knowing that it's okay to understand that your origin story may differ from this narrative and stay true to that, true to yourself. And it's not about what other people think. You are who identifies for yourself. Find resilience and strength in knowing that for yourself. Immerse yourself in that culture and the piece that you desire to learn. But also never forget where you come from and who are your people. So, yeah.
Thank you for that. Frederick.
Same thing. And, you know, like Kim and I, we get questions all the time whenever we do Q&As where people want to know, this, you know, where they explain that this was what was passed down and that was what was passed down. And you can see them working in their head where they're questioning themselves. To her point, we just say, listen, you got to be you, you know, you have to do the thorough research to the best of your ability, utilizing the resources that you have, or what's been passed down from an oral history standpoint, because I know that a lot of historians may not deem oral history as being a primary resource, but for our communities, it is a primary resource.
Absolutely.
Right? That's just what it is. And so we just encourage people to be your true authentic self, and you know what you know, and you don't have to get out here and overexert yourself trying to prove that you are a part of something when it's already within you. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you may not have the look, quote unquote, or the cultural understanding, but that's something that you learn along the way throughout the journey. And you don't have to broadcast your journey. You can make it something that's very intimate with people that support you and people that love you, people that you go through that, because to a large extent, we're still going through that journey now, especially carrying this skin. It's completely threatened by our skin, right? And that's what we strongly encourage. And if anyone wants to watch the film, currently we are doing private screenings at universities, organizations, because we want this to be very community-centric, to where we're able to have these type of thought-provoking, critical thinking conversations. And so if anyone would like to, of course, discuss with us what a screening could potentially look like in your community. We would love to do such.
Wow, thank you.
And Kimberly.
Yes, and please make sure you follow us over at Black Indians NC on Instagram and Facebook, and also at History Before Us over on Instagram and Facebook.
Awesome. Well, Kimberly and Frederick, thank you so much for sharing with us and our listeners. So those websites, once again, where they can find you, you can repeat it for them just one more time.
Sure. You can find us over at History Before Us on Instagram and Facebook, and also Black Indians NC on Instagram and Facebook as well. So we'd love to see you there. That's where we post a lot of content about where our next screenings are. So we would love to see you at our screenings for your listeners, if you're able to attend.
And awesome. So this will be aired before the 27th. We are going to have a screening at Elon University at 6 p.m. Is it 6 p.m. or 7
p.m.? 7 p.m.
On the campus of Elon University. Yep. And you go to our socials, then you'll be able to see the marketing materials for that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great. Thank you for sharing that. Well, to our listeners, we thank you for joining us and bearing with us through any tech issues. And we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. Thank you.